During his State of the State address in January, the governor highlighted the cost savings of a building process called design-build. He said now is the time to extend design-build authority to all state agencies, enabling them to propose and pursue new ways of expediting projects at a lower cost to taxpayers. So back in 2011, the legislature passed design-build authorization for a handful of agencies, like the Department of Transportation. But the legislature failed to renew authorization last year, and the law expired in December. In the world of commercial construction, design-build is a project delivery system in which design and construction services are contracted by a single person who is responsible for the whole shebang, the whole project, and is a single point of contact. Design-build differs from design-bid-build, which includes that extra step of bidding out elements of the project. With perhaps a $5 billion windfall to spend on infrastructure projects around the state, the legislature is bound to debate the merits of design-build this session. But there are some people who want design-build to go away permanently, like our next guest, Susan Kent, president of the Public Employees Federation. Welcome to the Capitol Press Room.
Thank you, Susan. And you did a wonderful job of explaining the differences.
Well, thank you. It is complicated, though. Why aren't you a fan of design-build?
Well, because there has been no information yet that design build actually does save money. And what we do know is that it is not as safe and it is not good public policy for the taxpayer.
Why do you say that it's not safe? That's an interesting argument that I haven't heard before, actually.
I say it's not safe because there is a reason why we have public services. There's a reason why we have government. And our professional engineers at DOT and our other agencies and our architects, they're there to serve the public and to make sure that, let's just talk about inspection, that any projects that are done, that are built, that they inspect and they make sure that they are safe. We just bought the Tappan Zee Bridge, the silos that collapsed. This is a design-build project. These were European silos that were not made for our northern weather. Our inspectors, absolutely, our designers would have made sure that that never happened. So that slows things up. They talk about this saving money. There's absolutely no information that talks about them saving money. They need to slow down with this. They need to look at the projects that they have already had in the pipeline on design build and have an independent panel look at whether or not it's actually more effective, more efficient, and does save the taxpayers' money. And we need that level of accountability where public employees are inspecting these projects.
I read in Capital New York that you told an assembly hearing in December that you welcomed the program's demise and said it was, quote, really some sort of sham to get money into mega corporations' pockets. What did you mean by that?
I meant that this really does hurt local economies, because if you look at what happens and you have one company that can take over this whole project, it cuts out small business. And so it doesn't help put our local people to work. Often, this work goes to out-of-state large corporations. So it doesn't help our local economy, and it doesn't help get our people back to work.
So is this about hiring union workers to do this kind of work? Is that the bottom line here, that design-build leaves out the labor contracts, the project labor agreements that you would like to see included in public construction?
Well, I can tell you this. PATH as a public union is always going to be united with our brothers and sisters in the trade unions. But PLAs, project labor agreements, they're for the trades to talk about. But what I talk about and what my members talk about is the fact that public employees should be designing, they should be inspecting, and that there should be transparency and accountability, and design build lack transparency, lack accountability, and lack public safety measures.
So let me read something from Cranes from February of last year. Quote, design build allows a single development team to submit both the design and construction plans at the same time for certain projects like bridges. Combining the two elements saves time and money and eliminates the risk of finger-pointing and lawsuits between construction and architecture firms who bid separately before working together. Cranes is a business publication, obviously, so they take a business's perspective on things. But the idea of eliminating the costs of lawsuits is appealing to a lot of people. So how do you respond to that argument?
I think what I would say is if you break that all down, that absolutely makes no sense in terms of making sure that our roads and bridges are safe for our public to travel on. And I don't know where they pull this out of their hat with the lawsuits. But the bottom line is if you look at how these design build projects are awarded, it's on best value. We have no explanation of what best value means. DOT really does need to answer how they are awarding these design build projects. And we need accountability and transparency. And to make an argument that says we need to cut out transparency, oversight, accountability, really is something that is an insult to the taxpayers and an insult to our public safety and what government is about.
So, Susan, they are talking about design build and how to either eliminate it permanently like you want or to change it in different ways. Last year, the governor had proposed adding project labor agreements to any design build renewal, and there are other things that you could add too, like more transparency. If you had to build a law that included design build, how would it be palatable to you?
I would say that if there were individual projects that warranted design build, they could be approved individually. There is no need to just rush in when we haven't had any study of these design build projects that have been done to date or in the pipeline and say, okay, everything should be design build. So there is a way right now that if they wanted to look at individual projects through design build, that could be done. And perhaps in an emergency situation and some sort of a threshold, perhaps over $100 million project. But in the bottom line, I would never ever agree that the inspection component should be done by the same company that designs and builds. That's absolutely a recipe for disaster.
Why do you say that?
Well, just think about it. Checks and balances. And everything in life that we do, checks and balances are needed. So if you have the same company designing, building, and then inspecting, it just leaves it open for cost-cutting measures to occur as the project goes on and for that to result in something similar that happened with the Big Dig. Now, people I know say, oh, that happened a long time ago, but you know what? It's reality, and it did happen, and there's a reason why we need public inspections, and the same person that's building should not be in charge of inspecting.
So it's checks and balances. Okay.
Absolutely. And public safety is the bottom line.
There is one other issue that I wanted to ask you about, and that is something that the Association of General Contractors says, that design bid build works well downstate, but poses a challenge for firms based elsewhere where organized labor is not as prominent. How would you address that concern?
I think when you said the General Contractors Association, all I can think of is that when we gave legislative testimony and they testified shortly after I did, when they were asked about whether or not design build saves money, they said, well, no, it actually doesn't save money. And for them to talk about, oh, we could do it downstate where there's unionized workers but not upstate, they don't give a hoot about unionized workers. They're just trying to ram this design build down the taxpayer's throat. Whenever you want to look for a unionized worker or a company really wants to look for a unionized worker, I can guarantee the trades will supply them.
They did testify at the same hearing in December, and they also said that this was quoted in Capital New York, that there are union benefits in design build, and that, quote, we have open shop members that provide a very generous benefit package as well. Are you taking a critical look at that as well?
All I can say is that's really, for the trades to focus on. But if design build, as had been proposed, was palatable to the trades and would be good for unionized workers, they wouldn't be objecting to it as we still are.
So who are you talking to? Which lawmakers are you talking to about your position on design build?
We're talking to all of them, but of course, Assemblyman Gant as the chair has taken a very big interest in what we said about making sure that there's some sort of an independent study done about the projects that have already been done. but PATH on all of our issues talks to all lawmakers throughout the state to make sure that everyone, every lawmaker, is aware of what our positions are on the issue.
So I wanted to transition to another issue, and that is that PATH is having a tough time lately. An appellate court determined that overtime and eligible employees in several state agencies are not entitled to an additional hours of overtime pay for work related to Superstorm Sandy. This was a lawsuit that PATH brought against the Cuomo administration.
Yes.
How big of a blow is that? I was reading, by the way, from the Times Union.
You know, it's not unexpected that the court finds that when the state puts an argument out that it's not arbitrary and capricious, but all I can tell you is that looking through, you know, what Bob Megna had put in as a rationale to the court, he made it appear as though overtime ineligible employees, and those are anybody over a grade 22, that they routinely work in excess of 40 hours. And he really did not paint a true picture of what really is happening. And these waivers were secured routinely before, not on a regular ongoing basis, but when situations like Superstorm Sandy hit and our members were working weeks at a time in excess of 45, 50 hours, more than that. So look, when something happens like this, for the state not to say, yes, we want to recognize that our employees are really working very hard and making sure that public services are restored and the public is safe, and for them to not agree to pay for overtime over 40 is absolutely ridiculous. It is something we're going to be looking at. We're negotiating our contract right now with the state. We're going to be looking at that as well as a lot of other issues to restore professionalization in our contract with the state of New York.
How are negotiations going with the state?
Right now we're having talks with them about setting up an ongoing schedule. It's my hope that we will be having intense negotiations. And all I can say is that we will be focused on making sure that our members are, their economic needs are being taken care of, and that their workplace needs are being taken care of. And there's a lot of language in our contract that needs to be changed to really reflect that who we represent are professional, scientific, and technical workers.
Can you
and
give us
be treated as such?
Can you give us an example of just one bit of language that you feel needs to be changed?
Oh my, there's just so many, but I would just say if you look at where they draw the line on who is overtime eligible and who isn't, say we go with what we have right now, grade 23,
mm-hmm.
then they should be treated as salary employees. And if they work 45 or 50 hours in 1 week, then they ought to be able to have some sort of an ability to on their own organize their work and change their schedules to reflect that they are professionals and that they know how to go about prioritizing their work and making decisions that are based on their professional stature. So we really need to get language in our contract that reflects the fact that you hire these professionals, you need to allow them to exercise their professional judgment.
Would you say, Susan Kent, that this administration is respectful of PATH?
Look, I would say that we've had a lot of twists and turns even before I came into office, since I've come into office. But my focus is on making sure that my members are represented and making sure that we're doing everything we can to work in concert with management and the elected officials to provide the best services for the public in the state of New York.
Any chance that you won't sign a contract?
When you say I won't sign a contract, what I say and what I said when I ran and what I still say and will do is we will sit at that table as long as we need to get the contract that we are proud to bring to our members. We won't be bringing any of this nonsense that was brought to the members the last time from the previous administration. We'll leave that table when we have a contract that reflects the needs of our membership.
Susan Kent is the president of the Public Employees Federation. It's the second largest public employees union in the state of New York. It's always good to talk with you, Susan. Thank you.
You too, Susan. Thank you.